Welcome to the Hyper Voice, episode 94. This is a show all about Pokemon's video game championship series. I'm your host, Steven Morioka, and I am here with Alex Underhill.
Heyo.
And Alessio Yuri Boschetto.
Hey, guys.
First off, I guess we should say congrats to Yuri for winning the kickoff invitational.
You can say it. I won't.
Thank you, Steven.
Yeah, congrats, Yuri.
You bet. So, obviously, we're going to be talking about the kickoff invitational for our show here. And this is kind of newer news for Alex and I because we just saw what happened this past weekend. Yuri, you've probably known about this for like almost 3 weeks now, so it's maybe old news for you. But first off, we want to just say that for our show here, you know, we are recording later in the week again because we were delaying for the Pokemon Presents to see if there would have been anything fruitful to come out of that for our show here. You know, it worked out for us last week when we got the Isle of Armor released and some other neat games announced. This one maybe backfired a little bit. All we got was Pokemon Unite. What did you two think of the Pokemon Presents on June 24th?
It definitely felt like a bit of a disappointment. I was not going to care too much about what it was, but Pokemon Unite felt like the community wasn't exactly excited for that, and they were definitely expecting more.
Yeah, I do think that a lot of the things that people do want is a little silly, like Let's Go Johto. Like, I personally wasn't a big fan of the Let's Go games, and I don't think we need another remake of Johto. I don't know. But, I'll play it as long as my friends are, like, playing it. I think that's going to be the most fun aspect of it. But other than that, don't really care too much for it. I've never played League or any MOBA or anything of that genre, I would say. I did think it was interesting that they had the hype video before. A lot of people were theorying that this was going to be played before Nats or Worlds, which I thought was really cool. I think it would have been a bit more of an exciting reveal if we were all in a venue together. Unfortunately, we cannot be at this time. But yeah, it was cool-ish, but I think it's like a fine thing for Pokemon to keep doing these Pokemon Presents. I like that they're almost doing their own style, like a Nintendo Direct. So as long as they keep news coming, I'll keep watching them.
Yeah, and there are going to be people who are just going to enjoy this type of game. So, you know, it's going to be great for them if they pick this up and can play with their friends. You know, 5-on-5 battles, that's neat. And Pokemon's really just trying to aim to hit every genre in the industry and just get the brand
it
everywhere.
Really, it might have its own circuit. I think that's part of why they were showing it still with the live event stuff, is that it's very possible that they're going to do live events with
e-sports.
It and stuff.
It definitely feels like they're aiming towards getting a circuit for it and potentially showcasing it at Worlds.
Hopefully it gets more love than Pokken. I don't know. Or at least a little bit more popular, unfortunately.
Yeah, imagine that. We're going to have VGC, TCG, Pokken, Pokemon Go, Pokemon Unite, and who knows, maybe more later on. But, you know, that's pretty much it for the Pokemon Presents. You know, nothing major related to our circuit or anything for competitive here, for VGC at least. And let's move into the kickoff invitational here. And, you know, obviously we have teams and stuff to go over and, you know, the results and how the stream went and how the event went. But, you know, Yuri, obviously you are our Players Cup kickoff invitational champion. And you have things you can tell us about here. And we have some questions for you, really, before we talk about some of the teams and what happened with the tournament. But I'm just kind of curious, you know, when did you find out you were going to be selected for this thing?
So the first contact that we had, or at least that I had with TPCI was on May 7th. So just about a month before the Invitational happened, they sent me an email which said, I think the title was Potential Pokemon Endeavor. And it wasn't clear at all. They were like, you need to sign an NDA and then we'll talk to you. Signed the NDA a few days later, message again, and they told me, we're looking to create something online for players to enjoy during these times, and one of the things we're looking to do is this kickoff invitational, and we'd like to have you play. So about the initial contact happened about a month before the event. And then over the weeks preceding the event, they gave us like more and more info.
Cool. Okay. If I remember that right, isn't that like that's even before they announced Players Cup officially, I think.
Yes, that is. Players Cup was announced 1 to 2 weeks afterwards.
That's really exciting, actually.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you ended up playing this, like, actually quite a while ago. It was that June 6th, 7th weekend. And did you guys kind of do it all over, like, the course of one day? Was it a multi-day event?
It was multi-day to accommodate for the different time zones. Most of the players were on Europe or North America time zone, so that was fine. But Graham was on the Australian time zone, which is not as flexible. So what we did was we played winners round one, winners round two, losers round one, and losers round two, which is a total of three rounds on the Saturday. We started at around 4 p.m. Central Europe, so 10 a.m. Eastern. Played for like 3 to 4 hours, and then the next day, same thing with the remaining players.
Man, what time was that for Graham then?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering.
For Graham, it must have been around 2 a.m., I think.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's rough for him.
Yeah, it's, I don't know if, because sometimes it's either midnight or 2 a.m., I'm pretty sure it's 2 a.m. Also, the order for the days was not the same as the order shown on stream. Which is kind of important, to like how my run went specifically, but, the winners round two,
the winners round two
was how they started day two on the stream, but winners round two and losers round two, which were both shown on day two on stream, were actually, done during day one for us.
Yes. Okay.
Oh, cool.
So the stream timeline doesn't quite match the timeline that happened in real life, which is, definitely a difference maker with, like, regards to, like, I don't know, how prepared you are for the matchup, information, I guess, like, how long you've been sitting on that information, considering this was a open team sheet tournament. That's actually the next thing that we wanted to kind of talk about here is, how did you like that factor? You guys had the team sheets available to you. This is actually something that I think we're dying to know is, when did you get the team sheets? Because this is going to be relevant for people going into Players Cup.
Yes. So two important things about the whole open team sheets things. The first thing is we actually only discovered about the open team sheets a few days before the tournament. We were contacted about that on Monday before the tournament. I think it was even Tuesday my time, because the contacts were usually like evening North America time. So we only had, like, if someone wanted to adapt their team for the Players Cup because of that, they only had a couple of days, which was a bit awkward, potentially, at least not for me, but it could have been. And the second thing, we got the team sheets right before the match. Pairings would go up on Battlefy. Every single player had a link to their own team sheet that they were to share with the opposing player in the Battlefy chat right before the game.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay. What kind of links are these?
They're RK9 Labs links because.
Wow. Okay.
RK9 has a new feature that they've had for, I think, 3 months, right before the entire circuit got canceled, is when they introduced it, to where you can make a team list on their website and submit it through that instead of having a paper team sheet. And obviously, that was useful for the Players Cup specifically. And I think they developed the link feature specifically for the Players Cup. But yeah, it's just a link with all the information neatly arranged.
That is so exciting. I like that idea now. That's actually really cool. Now, are these team sheets just like typical team sheets? Like, are the speed, the Pokemon stats, are those just left blank? Are they still on the sheet?
No, they're not on the sheet at all. They're.
Oh, so it is like an edited, modified version.
Yeah, it doesn't really look like a team sheet. It's more like, in this link, there are these 6 Pokemon boxes with the information about each Pokemon set in a way that's easy to read.
So almost like the Battle Stadium pronounce, like the screenshots that people take?
Yes, close enough to the rental team share feature.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
That's what I imagined it was kind of gonna look like. Yeah, I think that's pretty cool. You know, you were the first group to kind of experience this. And it was funny, like, watching the stream that, you know, I can recall at least a time from each of the commentators where they all kind of forgot that you all had access to the other opponent's team sheets. Because they would talk about, like, oh, this information was revealed, or They just learned about this item or this thing, whereas, like, you know, we're just so, you know, while you had open team sheets, we're all just so conditioned to having to play that information, gathering information early on in the sets.
Yes, I think it's very much second nature for the commentators to think about which information the players now have access to. And sometimes they just forgot that we actually had almost all the information. Stats mattered sometimes.
Yeah.
There was specifically a time where I was going to win a game and I kept going just because I needed to scout a speed stat. Even though it could have risked me losing the game, but it was really important information, so I still had to go for it.
Yes. Now, you mentioned earlier that obviously you and the seven others who are in the kickoff invitational, you know, had to sign an NDA and all that. Now, obviously, you need to keep things secret. So, how difficult was that for you?
Very, very difficult. Especially after winning, because before that, I was very excited, but it was also like this information is actually going to be public in some time. Because obviously they were going to announce who the players were at some point. But after winning, it was very much like, I can't even really properly celebrate because I am not allowed to tell anyone.
That sounds like torturous, man. Oh, man. Like, that's awesome that you had the opportunity to play in this and, of course, win it all. But just holding on to that for so long, I imagine, like, it was counting down the days to, like, Christmas or something. Just like, you know, I can finally reveal this to everybody.
Yes, pretty much.
So that's awesome. And this was actually kind of related to your team. Around that time, that early June, was when the release of the Hidden Ability Starters came out. And that was really the, like, major, I guess, metagame change there at that time. There wasn't, like, a lot of tournaments going on, and nothing new was being legalized. Like, we had just gotten the last couple of GMAX forms at the beginning of May, I think.
Yes, May.
That sounds right. And so there was nothing else new being added, but the Hidden Ability Starters, all three of the starters for Galar actually have very solid abilities. We've talked about them in the past couple of episodes, but you were the only player to add them to your team. I was going to ask, why was that the case? Like, did you have a team, or did you find something better, or did you not have a team? And, like, have you had any insight as to why nobody else went that route?
Yeah, so I was a bit surprised to see that nobody else really tried any of the starters for the tournament. I didn't think many would, but I thought, like, at least someone else. And that didn't pan out that way. But for me, it was more like I did have one or two teams that I thought I could run. But I really didn't want to run a team I was known for. And the teams I had were teams I was known for. So when the opportunity presented itself, I just took it. I thought the team I used seemed pretty cool. I thought it was interesting in many ways. I thought people might not be prepared enough for it, with the starters only coming out a few days before the Invitational. And it seemed just very strong overall, except for a couple of matchups that specifically I was not expecting to face in the Invitational anyway, like Sun teams, which are very bad. But I just didn't think the type of player that was in the Invitational would run that. Another important thing in the team choice was we actually knew the bracket a few days before the tournament happened.
That's crazy.
So I knew I was going to face Ashton round one before, like, way before the tournament, about 5 days before the tournament, which can change your mindset quite a bit. Before that, we didn't even know which ones the players were. Obviously, I had, like, my own guesses, but they weren't entirely correct. All of a sudden, they sent us this email, which told us, these are the players, this is the bracket, this is who you're gonna face.
Oh, was this the point that you had found out who the other participants were?
Yes, we only found out a few days before, at the same time as we got the bracket. And at the same exact time that we knew about open team sheets as well.
Yeah, all that information just kind of came at once. That's a dense package to send out with all of that important tournament information.
Yeah, they're just opening the floodgates.
Yeah.
For real.
One other important thing about the team choice was everyone in the tournament was going to play Togekiss Expert with Dragapult, in my opinion. And I thought the team had a good matchup versus that. And they weren't prepared for it, which is what happened.
So an important aspect, one I wanted to mention, that this almost seems a little bit like NPA in like that first round. You're like, all right, my opponent for this week is Ashton. Like, what do I want to bring for Ashton? Of course, you are going to be playing the whole rest of the field. Was there anybody that you did get to play? I guess there's got to be some two people, right, at least?
Didn't get the question, sorry.
Who did you not get to play against in the tournament?
I didn't get to play versus Wolf, Marcus, and Graham.
And Graham, okay. And those were players on the opposite side, because you guys did like a round-robin pools kind of thing?
No, it was a double elimination. So they weren't really on the opposite side. I could face them in losers. For example, I faced Edu in losers, who was on the opposite side, but I did face him, I think, in round two of losers, because the bracket switches up in the loser side in a weird way. And then I also faced James, who was on the opposite side, because it wasn't losers finals, so pretty advanced in the tournament.
Yeah, that makes sense. That all tracks. Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, we saw you play against Alex Gomez, PokéAlex, twice in the grand finals, because we did have a bracket reset, which is really cool. I guess we should probably mention everyone probably knows this already, but we should just mention what your team was again. So we've already talked about, you know, some hidden ability starter Pokemon, which were the Cinderace and Rillaboom. Actually, Yuri, why don't you just run through your team of six and just tell us, kind of briefly summarize what your team did and does.
Yeah, sure. So the team, the six members are Cinderace, Rillaboom, Bisharp, Togekiss, Primarina, and Dusclops. The main concept about the team is that Cinderace and Bisharp are a really threatening duo, with the speed control from the Cinderace with the Libero ability, coupled with the fact that if they try to nerf your Cinderace by intimidating, their Bisharp gets a boost and then can go for a very strong assurance. And I actually had tested a team similar to this before, but it didn't have a trick room mode, which this team does. The main mode for the team is going Cinderace Bisharp up front, being very offensive. Then one of your Pokemon gets KO'd. You bring in Dusclops, set up trick room, Primarina sweeps the late game. And the two other Pokemon, Togekiss and Rillaboom, are just there for some extra support and some matchups.
Something I wanted to mention earlier was that I think it was really cool that you assessed the tournament meta. You had said that your team might have been a bit weak to like a Sun team or something like that. And did you make that call at the point where you knew all the players in the tournament and were just kind of like saying, all right, I know these type of players, I know what they usually bring, and I can afford to bring a team like this because I'm not going to face that kind of matchup?
Yes, I knew who the players were going to be at that point, and I just made the call of, I really don't think these players would be the type of player to bring Sun. If there is one, it's probably one Sun team, and at that point, I might get lucky with how the bracket plays out. I specifically was almost sure Ashton wouldn't bring it, which for the round one is very important. And then from there on, I was like, probably not going to face it. It was my opinion. And fortunately, it was a good call and nobody brought Sun teams.
I just love that aspect of, like, you know, really calling the tournament meta, especially when you have like so much information about who's going to be in it. That's really cool. Something else was that, of course, you had three starters. That's just kind of funny where we're at in this 2020 metagame. It's still the case, even more so now in the post-DLC release metagame, it seems. And that's just really funny. I saw a lot of comments on, like, your tweet. Everybody was surprised by Primarina, and I don't know if that's more of a casual thing or if you guys also thought Primarina was, like, not used too often, but I thought it was a pretty established Pokemon in the meta. I guess maybe this is just a first big win for it.
I honestly had not actually noticed those comments. No, it definitely felt like a very established Pokemon for me. Specifically, I decided to like start testing Primarina when I saw Ashton playing it on stream, like on his stream multiple times, and I thought this Pokemon seems extremely busted. and I want to try it out and see how it
does.
Yeah,
I think it is the starter with the highest special attack. I'm pretty sure I had that question on that quiz game show I was on the other day.
Probably. That sounds right, yes.
It's got a very, very good offensive stat.
Yeah, it's got solid typing, too. You know, can really dent holes into opponents' teams. You know, one of the things about kind of just like the double elimination bracket in general, and we kind of mentioned this, and this will be relevant for players playing in the Players' Cup portion of July. But, you know, the double elimination bracket, right? I counted these matches here, but Alex Gomez made it through to Grand Finals through the winner's bracket, and in total, he played only 5 sets, and because you lost in winner's round 2, to him actually, a really cool storyline that you end up beating him in Grand Finals, I think you had to play 7 sets in total compared to his 5, so...
Yes, I played 7 sets total, yeah. Which is most in the tournament, yes. I think that's most possible in an 8-player bracket, too.
Yeah, so that's kind of nuts, you know. Like I mentioned, a really cool storyline that you ended up playing Alex Gomez in Grand Finals, and you know, defeating the player who did you know, knock you down into the losers bracket. You know, tell us about, you know, what it was like going into the Grand Finals against especially Alex Gomez. We know he's kind of a rival of yours. You guys are also good friends, and he's a really solid player too.
Yeah, so when the big thing that happened for me emotionally during that tournament is when I lost to Alex in winners round 2, I thought that matchup was horrible and that I could honestly not beat it at all. And I also knew that I was guaranteed to face Alex at some point if I continued going, because as he was in winners finals, whether he won that or not, I would have had to face him with the way the bracket goes. And that my first loss to him was during the day 1 that we played. So the only thing I did between day 1 and day 2 was prepare as hard as possible for that matchup. And I was hoping Alex would lose in winners finals and I would only have to win 1 set versus him. when I saw that he won winners finals, it was very discouraging for me, if I'm being honest. So I beat James Beck, and then there's a pause during the tournament because after both Grand Finals players were decided, they took us for interviews, which are the small snippets that were seen right before the Grand Finals set in the stream. Those took a long time, about an hour and a half between the two of us. I think my own interview was about 20 minutes, and then they took like 3 sentences out of it, which is kind of funny to me. And I remember during that interview talking about how I really thought that I could maybe take 1 or 2 games, but that it was going to be extremely hard to take the entire set. So it was very scary to go in. And as Alex is one of my biggest rivals in the game, I was not feeling great about the fact that I would lose probably kind of badly. But then things worked out and it was kind of my happy ending.
Yeah, I love how your team is just, you know, you said it yourself during the stream, during the interview, actually. You have a really hyper-offensive team, puts on a lot of pressure on opponents, and you have that defensive backbone to back it up, so you can play, you know, different modes, and your team does have a variety of different modes it can play, as well as, like, every other person's team in this Invitational. Like, one thing I did notice, specifically between you and Pokealex, is that if I can recall this right, I think I only saw PokéAlex, you know, Dynamax his, Gigantamax his Lapras. And I think it was like the only Pokemon I saw him do that. And a lot of the other, players were able to, be more flexible with their Dynamax Pokemon. Like, I know, James and Ashton, Dynamax a bunch of different things. You, I remember, seeing at least, I know I've saw 4 at least, like the Cinderace, Bisharp, Rillaboom, and Primarina. I saw all Dynamax at least once throughout that, tournament. So I thought that was pretty cool. Like, Alex's team had really good flexibility and options as well. But I think, like, you being able to shake it up with your Dynamax Pokemon, too, was able to help you out a lot.
Yeah, I agree. The Dynamax options thing was very important in some matchups, and specifically against Alex, where I could max the Rillaboom to take a G-Max Resonance, which Assault Vest Rillaboom cannot normally if the Lapras is Life Orb. It's kind of a last resort type of thing, but just having the option was very big, and me being able to prepare the matchup in sufficient different approaches, because if I just went with the same thing multiple times, Alex could have time to think about different ways to beat my only mode. So when I prepared specifically, this was in my mind that I need to find 2-3 game plans that could potentially work so that I can mix it up enough.
Yeah, you were really making that matchup look like not entirely rock, paper, scissors, but the way that you were like game planning and approaching things, it was really just like trying to mix it up so that you would catch your opponent off guard and in that lead. It seemed to be a very important aspect of the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Something else that I wanted to correct Steven on was that your team put on a lot of pressure, and I think that was kind of a mistake because you did not have pressure on your Dusclops. You had Frisk.
Yes, that is correct. As I said before, we did not have a lot of previous notice for the...
I was told you did this to flex.
Team sheets being open thing. And I distinctly remember during the tournament, I think it was during right after Losers Finals, I messaged Edu and I was like, I'm a complete fool. I have Frisk on Dusclops. And it doesn't make any sense. But the official version is I did it so that the viewers could have a better experience.
I like that take.
Oh, the one that you gave out has pressure?
Sorry, what?
You said that you did it so that people would have a better experience.
Yes, by seeing, because the items were public to players, but not to the viewers, so.
Yeah, there you go.
It was just
there
a nice gesture, really.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, like, I guess without notice, you know, this rule set with having the open team sheets kind of negates Frisk almost like 99% of the time. But, you know, we talked about the whole Zoroark thing last time, but, you know, Alex,
we did.
Why don't we,
hold on. We should probably update Yuri on that. Yuri, apparently it's not all cases. If they have a Zoroark, you can use the item to figure out if it's a Zoroark or not.
Yeah. I figured out, like, when Steven was talking about it, I was like, oh, yeah.
So Frisk does have a use in a open team sheet tournament.
I think it's actually probably still optimal on Dusclops specifically, then.
No.
Oh,
pressure on Dusclops is so unlikely to actually matter. There are other Pokemon.
No, like, it lives a long time. Like, if it's gonna be,
it does.
You know,
it does, but it's very hard for it to stall out all the moves from a Pokemon because you'd only do that in a 1v1 situation, and you'd need to have like a good recovery move for that to happen.
And that's Pain Split. It's great, man. I love Pain Split.
It's very good. Not in a 1v1 though. Like,
no,
in
I know
a long
what you mean.
1v1. But for a different Pokemon like Gorgeist, for example, you'd probably just run Insomnia then.
Oh, wait, are you saying because it gets Frisk?
Yeah, Gorgeist gets Frisk. I'm pretty sure Edu, when he got second with Gorgeist at Oceania, had Frisk on it.
Yeah, that I do recall that too.
But now
you would
definitely
that,
run Insomnia.
Something that I'm sure people have realized much earlier than I have is that Snorlax was actually the most used Pokemon in the tournament.
Yeah, I think it was at the same level as Dusclops, 5 out of 8, I believe.
No, I think I'm seeing 4 Dusclops, if I'm correct here. Yeah, there's yeah. Graham did not have a Dusclops, Ashton and Bake did not have Dusclops, and Edu as well. So
oh yeah,
that
4
is,
Dusclops. So I guess I'm on par with Togekiss then, which had 5. No, wait, no. Togekiss
as well. Togekiss also had 4 because they had to correct Gomez's team from having a Whimsicott to Togekiss. But so Snorlax was the most common one, though. It's almost like unfair to count Marcus and Wolf twice because they are using the same team. Although I guess there was another team, right? There was Edu and Bake, right? Had the same team.
Edu and Bake had the same team as well. Yes.
So actually that's more Snorlax, so you could almost condense it if you remove duplicate teams.
And it is worth noting that 4 out of 5 of the Snorlaxes filled the last 4 slots in the tournament.
Are you trying to imply that Snorlax was not the call?
Yes, I will also say my team originally had a Snorlax,
It seems like you made the right choice. You got rid of the dead weight.
I got rid of the Snorlax, put a Togekiss in, and it was definitely the right call.
Yeah, I mean, when you call it dead weight, that's going to be a lot of weight, so...
it is a lot of dead weight.
You know, we've talked about all these scenes. Why don't we just, like, mention them on the show really quick? I know, Alex, you get super bored with this whole portion, but, you know, Poke Alex, we've heard Yuri's team already, but Poke Alex, Alex Gomez, had a Whimsicott, Incineroar, Lapras, Conkeldurr, Dusclops, and Dracovish. James Bake had a Togekiss, Arcanine, Excadrill, Snorlax, Rotom Wash, and Dragapult. Same goes for Edu, Eduardo Cunha. Ashton Cox in fourth had a Togekiss, Incineroar, Excadrill, Tyranitar, Rotom Wash, and Dragapult. And then for both Wolf and Marcus, they both had a Hatterene, Indeedee Female, Ribombee, Snorlax, Dusclops, and Venusaur. And then Graham Amity had Whimsicott, Incineroar, Ludicolo, Snorlax, Milotic, and Dracozolt. So I wanted to ask, I guess, both of you here, does anything stand out to you from the Pokemon that these players brought?
Yes. The main thing that stands out, other than the incredible presence of Snorlax, is I really felt like Wolf and Marcus just made a very bad call for the tournament. In that their team was very much suffering against Togekiss, Excadrill, Dragapult, and there are four players in the tournament that are known for Togekiss, Excadrill, Dragapult, those being James, Edu, Ashton, and myself. I didn't end up bringing it, but still, I'm someone that could have very well brought it. It was my failsafe in case I didn't find this team. So it felt like a very awkward call, in my opinion. I do not understand exactly what their plan was, but Marcus could have done much better in his bracket if he hadn't gotten pretty unlucky versus Alex in his first match. But either way, it just seemed like a weird call to me.
So I'm glad that you left the other team that I found interesting in the tournament, and that is the runner-up team, Alex's. I just think that was a team that seemed like it was running through everybody. And even, like, honestly, Yuri, I did not have hope for you or anybody else after seeing how dominantly Alex made it to Grand Finals. I actually was talking with people in, like, the call when we were watching it. And I was like, yeah, like, the only person that can win this left is Yuri. And then they were like, why are you saying Yuri? He lost to him earlier. And I was like, oh, I missed that part. Yeah, Alex is winning.
So I 100% agree. Alex made a very smart call in bringing a team that is very good against the balanced Togekiss, Excadrill, Dragapult teams, which a lot of players were going to run, specifically James, Ashton, Edu, probably myself as well. And he was just running through it, and he beat me as well, and I was like the one player that didn't have that sort of team. So I agreed that it really seemed like he would just have a very dominant win. Obviously, I'm glad that it's not what happened, but it's really the impression anyone would have gotten from watching the stream, I think.
Very, very cool team. I really liked how it flexed between like doing a lot of heavy offense with a Life Orb Lapras with Fake Tear support, a Dracovish that was going to be boosted by the rain that Lapras sets, but also like some strong heavy hitters that very much enjoyed the screens that Aurora Veil that comes from using a G-Max Lapras, the Conkeldurr and the Dracovish, both just very hard hitting Pokemon, as well as supported by a Dusclops when it's behind screens. It's going to be doing 50 HP to you every time with Nightshade, and you're not going to be doing that much to it.
Yes, I absolutely agree. It's I think it's a very good call for the tournament and a very cool team in general. I've played a variant of it after the tournament, actually, because people obviously didn't know the results yet, but I had like played him and I was like, this team seems very strong. I should like work around this and figure out how this team fares in general.
I think I saw James Beck do the same thing at a Rose Tower tournament or something. Yes, like that.
I played at Rose Tower as well. It was different. It didn't have the Trick Room mode itself, but it worked on the Lapras, Tailwind, Whimsicott, and Dracovish core.
And I guess I should plug, I believe the person who made the team, which was David Kutesh, at least made the original framework of it or something like that.
I think the group of people that worked on it were David Kutesh, Oliver Eskelin, and Alex. I don't know who like did the most work and stuff, but I know.
At least we can plug all of them.
Yeah.
And yeah, great, really cool team there. And then also, yeah, Yuri, you won with three starters. You won with your favorites. I think nobody can dispute that. So
that is definitely the... the takeaway, I think, from the tournament is use your favorites.
Yes. Yeah, so with this win, you know, you are qualified for the Players' Cup Finals, I think they're calling it, in August. So you'll be joining 15 others who whoever make it through the July stage. And, you know, we got more information about that, and we're going to talk about that in a little bit. I am curious, though, like, I believe the, you know, I was curious about this. There were the seven others you played with. So, Alex, James, Ashton, Eduardo, Wolf, Graham, and Marcus, you know, I'm sure everyone's wondering, but they're all eligible to play in July, right?
Yes, they are.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, you know, some people may, maybe or don't feel so great about that, that they get another chance at it, but I would, almost argue the opposite. Like, it'd be, almost unfair to them if they couldn't play in, July, mainly because, like, this, you talk about the eight people in here, like, this is the top echelon of players we have here. We mentioned how everyone here has Top Cut Worlds before. I think a seven of the eight have actually won nationals or internationals. And, you know, Graham, the one who didn't, took second at one. So, you know, you think about, like, this is like a hypothetical situation, but if you're in a flights, right? If we have two flights in a tournament, and say, I'm in one flight, and then Alex on our show here, and Yuri, you two are in the other one. You know, people are going to want to be in my flight and not in that stacked flight over there. So it's almost unfair to them, like, if they want to get another chance at this.
Yeah, I think in a way it is unfair for players who have two chances. It's also unfair for me to go directly. The point of the invitational isn't really to be fair. Like, that's just not the concept. Right. It's more of a hype event with a specific prize. It's very clearly not a fair system, but it's not designed to be fair.
Yeah.
But honestly, if I had to choose between only playing the July qualifiers or only playing the Invitational, I would have taken the July qualifiers any day of the week. I was not going to bank on me getting first at a tournament with Wolf, Marcus, Edu, Ash, everyone else. Yeah. Like, it's just not realistic for anyone to get into this tournament and think, yeah, I'm going to win.
Yeah, it was really just a showcase of some of the finest talent we have. You know, that's, I guess, the ultimate goal of what it was to do. So, you know, in July, you know, like you just mentioned, you know, both Yuri and I will be on the sidelines for very different reasons. Alex, you will be competing in July, starting with Series 5. And we have a little bit more information about you know, Players' Cup at this stage because of our delayed recording time, we actually got some more email information. So, Alex, if you want to kind of run us down some things you found in there, some interesting tidbits, maybe some highlights, let's talk about some of these things.
Yeah, I do think it's funny that you stole like tidbit. This like information that I was waiting to say is that I am the only person in this call that this information affects, but it's not you two for like such different reasons. It's so funny. We have one person in the final stage and one person not in it at all. Like, it's just so bizarre. So yeah, we ended up getting like the player's handbook and like the rules for it, as well as registration was opened today, and. So you can get all set up on there on Battlefee and get into the official Discord. Unfortunately, no actual chatting in there. My heart was broken. I was really looking forward to this just, like, terrible server full of all these VGC and TCG qualified people.
Should have been in the Invitational channel.
What's that?
Should have been invited to the Invitational channel. We could chat there.
Oh, yeah? Gotcha. So yeah, we got like I guess like the most important thing we got is like the player's handbook. It talks about some things like the tournament structure, which we already knew. They came up. They have a great graphic in here though that shows how like the whole tournament structure goes. Like, there's the one person coming from the Invitational, everybody else starting out in that May International Challenge, and then moving on to the individual stages. This is all about what's going to be called the online qualifiers or the regional qualifiers, because it is going to be based on your specific region and such. Other than that, it like a lot of the information is like stuff that we knew. I remember that one of the key details. Let me see. I gotta find it. There was something in here that people were pointing out. Do you remember what it was, Yuri? Maybe you saw people talking about it on Twitter.
I don't know what exactly you're talking about.
There was something. I'm gonna go to the. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. We confirmed the like style of seating. I guess.
Oh yeah.
Like it was like something that was like almost assumed. But the phrasing here is players will be seated in a double elimination style bracket based on each player's ranking in the pre-qualifier. Now the pre-qualifier is of course that May International Challenge. So it's like we're all going to be seated based on how we finished. Like after doing Billa's like community check on it, like I'm somewhere in the 20s, so that means I will be facing somebody in like the 230s or 240s or so.
Yes, yeah, so overall you have a pretty good seed going into this.
Yeah, I'm surprised it was that high. The regions were definitely not even looking across the board, like
not at all.
I remember like the bottom finishing for Europe was like 1675 or something.
I think it's slightly above that, like a 1678 even.
Got it. And the NA over here, we had like 1640 getting in, and then we had we don't even need to talk about the Oceania region being what they were. And I can't exactly confirm where LATAM was, but I think they were below 1600. Like it's just so crazy how different the rating zones finished. Really unfortunate for those Europeans having to grind so hard.
Yeah, it was definitely much more tense for Europeans, at least like decently high ranked Europeans in the IEC, that after we started seeing the rankings were like, I'm actually not sure if I made it in now, and most people from other regions would have known that they were in by then.
So some other important details here, they kind of just go over how the tournament will be run online. Like it's just going to be, you're going to be in the Discord but also using Battlefield and stuff like that. And like I think an important note here is like share any information needed with your opponent and connect to them in game to start your match. I think that's kind of like interesting because we now learned that we might be sending our own team sheets to our opponent, and so that's probably what that's implying, is that we have to make sure to send them our own sheets. And that that system does seem to make sense. I'm glad that like we finally have a bit more information on how that's going to go down, because it was just a big question mark for a lot of people for all this time. Is just like, when are we going to send these sheets? How are we going to send them? What's it going to look like? They confirmed everything that's going to be on it. Like one like thing that we were still wondering about was like whether or not the GMAX factor would be visible to our opponents. And that is like kind of critical for certain Pokemon. I can't think of like a Pokemon that like it sways the entire way you play around them, but like it is still very important information.
I think it can change how you play versus some things, right? Like Cinderace, but yeah, I can confirm that the Gigantamax factor was on the team sheets that we were sending our opponents.
Yeah, yeah. Like I guess like Snorlax is another big one, because like sometimes they don't have berries, and so like it's just like, oh, you don't even need to run the GMAX form, unless I guess you wanted to recover some berries for your partner Pokemon. Let's see here. They mentioned a lot of things about like resolving issues using like screenshots, stuff like that, as well as oh yeah, disconnects. This was one that I like honestly had not thought about before the tournament, and I was like, I didn't even think about how they were going to resolve disconnects, because that would definitely be a really big issue not you know, being there in person. So it's saying there's, you just like, you know, both send your screenshots, and this important last bullet point mentions, if there is a significant difference in board state and both players anticipate the same clear outcome to the game, they may choose to agree that one player would have won the disconnect had the disconnect not occurred. Such agreements will be accepted by the staff, but not enforced. And pushing your opponent to agree to such after they refused may be considered coercion and subject to penalties. But yeah, they're basically saying, like, if you disconnect and you want to be sportsman, like, you're allowed to. You're allowed to say, like, yeah, I think my opponent was going to win. Like, if you could just give them the win for that one, we'll move on to game two. I think that's a really interesting aspect.
Yes, go ahead, Steven.
Well, I was just going to say, like, I'm really glad, like, they have that, I guess, honor code in place, you know, to do that. You know, that's really befitting of Pokemon and, you know, everything that they want to represent.
Spirit of the game.
Yeah, I think the idea behind accepted but not enforced is essentially the same way that TCG gentleman agreements work, in that players are allowed to do them, staff will never enforce them, but they're completely allowed, and it's just about you cannot try to convince your opponent after they say no. You cannot attempt to coerce them. And it's just, it's left open to the players being sportsmanlike, but it's good that it's specified that you should, like, you are somewhat encouraged to be sportsmanlike by the rules just saying that.
This should come as no surprise, but there's no round timer. We didn't have a round timer for the format, but that's still the case online. If players are taking particularly long, though, they might, like, you know, get a timer put on them or something. There's no drops because it's a double elimination tournament. So if you want to stop playing, just stop playing. Then you'll suffer a loss for a no-show, and you'll be out of that tournament pretty fast. So that's kind of funny. The Series 5 rules actually came out the day of us recording this, I believe, in-game. So that is going to be what you'll have to download to play in these tournaments.
Understandable.
Yeah, so... Yep, that makes sense. Other than that, the rest of this just kind of goes over some boring stuff, like how to use the online platforms and stuff, and...
Yep.
Yeah, that's so, really it.
Alex, I mean, you and, what is it, like 800, 900 other people, almost 1,000, people are going to be starting in a few weeks for this tournament. You know, I'm just kind of curious, you know, right now, what are some of your concerns, like, heading into this? Is there anything, are there any logistical issues you're worrying about, or is it mostly, like, your team for Series 5?
No, I'm feeling pretty good, team-wise, I would say. Like, I've played with a lot of stuff. I'm mostly just trying to test out the new toys. So that's been very fun. There's, like, a lot of fun new Pokemon that, of course, came out with the DLC. So that regard, we've got a lot of time for that, too. Like, the teams are not locked until, like, the Friday before we compete. So, that is pretty nice. We got lots and lots of time. If you are in the Players' Cup and are worried, don't worry. We've got plenty of time to figure things out. In regards to, like, logistical issues, it's definitely going to feel a little weird playing online. Like, I'm glad that they've ironed out most of, like, those disconnect issues and stuff like that. I think, like, I'm curious because, like, I was considering possibly, like, streaming it. I'm wondering how they're going to handle aspects like that. You know, and
actually a clause about that.
Like, is that in the this is in the other one, is the Players Cup?
It's in the legal rules document. It does not say that you cannot stream. It says that they can prohibit you from streaming. Because it says sponsor may require players to record and submit their match play to sponsor. I think sponsor is just TPCI here.
It is TPCI.
Sponsor may, in its sole discretion, compile player submissions and broadcast or otherwise publicly display submissions as part of sponsor's coverage and publicity of the tournament for a potential broadcast of general tournament coverage by sponsor. So I think what they're saying in this is essentially whatever they stream, they're going to get players with capture cards to give them game footage. And
that's what I thought.
Yeah. And then it says sponsor may also prohibit players from live streaming their matches and may require players to keep their match results confidential.
Yeah, I'm glad I brought this up because that's going to be some that's like a really weird and interesting aspect of it. You're also not allowed to threaten world peace is another thing that's important and mentioned in here. Like they have a lot of like the classic like I don't know like
It's a lot of legal disclaimers.
No discrimination towards like race, ethnicity, religion, sexual orientation, and stuff like that. But they also say that you cannot make threats to a person, place, business, or world peace.
Right, exactly. So, you know, it's interesting. I don't know where to go from here, but one thing I did want to mention is like, you know, potentially keeping match results confidential for a few days because we kind of talked about how there's an offset of the stream each week. You know, it's a few days after each weekend event in July. So, you know, it'd be kind of silly if we all know the results already and then the stream happens and it's like, well, what's the point? You know, maybe just to watch some of the matches or the highlights. But, you know, this way, at least it'll keep, you know, if some people really can't say anything about this, then it's still worth it to watch the stream, I think.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that because I was curious about, like, if they do choose to go this route and they have certain people that are not allowed to disclose the results of their match, but other people are allowed, then we can just kind of, like, suss out who is going to be on stream in the upcoming week. That'll be kind of a funny thing that's, like, inevitable. And then another thing is, I wanted to mention this earlier, it's something that Sam mentioned on the previous episode, but it's going to be interesting to see, or no, maybe it wasn't Sam, but we were talking about this in the last episode, the bracket. We need to know if we are going to see the bracket or not. I imagine that you got to see the bracket for Players Cup, Yuri, did you or no?
Yeah, I did. I did, and everyone should be able to see the bracket for this, I'm pretty sure, as there is a Battlefy. It is private, I believe, but every player like that signs up goes to it, and there is a bracket there that's waiting to be seeded. And since everything happens on Battlefy, I don't think there even is an option to hide the bracket. I'm pretty sure it should be semi-public, as in every player in the tournament can see it, not every other person, because I believe the Battlefy page should be hidden, like the entire page. But if you have the link, you have access to it.
Yes. So that'll lead to kind of what I talked about in the last episode, but basically you can kind of anticipate who you're going to be playing in the coming rounds. Like you, if you win your round early, you can start to look at the two people that you might face. And then there's also the aspect of like, let's say that you win all three of your games and you know who you're going to be playing in that next week's round, then you can maybe get that team info a bit early if you have a friend that had played them earlier in the tournament. So with the bracket being public, that's definitely going to be an aspect that is still going to put players without large friend groups at a bit of a disadvantage, but still not nearly as large of a disadvantage without like the public team sheets. So I think that's going to be still really nice that we have those public team sheets.
Yeah, I'd say it's not as huge, but there's still the fact that if I manage to have access to a player's team info for, let's say I play versus him July 18, round one. I now have the information a week in advance. I have one entire week to prepare a game plan. They might only have 5 minutes, which is obviously still a pretty big difference. But it's still, like, in general, nice that the information is available to everyone during the matches.
Yeah, yeah. So that'll definitely be an aspect. If you've got friends in the tournament, make sure to use them. The power of friendship has always been very broken in the game of VGC live tournaments and online too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you know, there's a lot of things that we're still going to uncover and discover in the coming weeks as we lead up into the start of July for Players Cup. One last thing I do want to talk about is maybe just a little bit of Series 5. We have a few more minutes here. And I kind of want to just talk about, you know, maybe we can each bring up a Pokemon we think is going to be strong with, you know, some of the returners, some of the new ones or something like that. So why don't we just go over, like, maybe a, I don't know, maybe a team, a core, or a Pokemon that you think it might be strong starting in Series 5.
So I'll go ahead and kick us off here. This is, like, not terribly secret, but it'll be out by the time this is posted. I'm going to be playing in one of the online tournaments this weekend. Steven, I know we have that Midwest one.
Yes, yeah, I did see that.
And then there's also the Rose Tower one. I'm probably just going to play in the tournament that is larger, because I want to have, you know, a stronger competition. And I think I'm going to be trying out G-Max Blastoise, actually. It seems like it's going to be pretty fun. I mostly wanted to, like, you know, use it just for the sake of having the move Cannonade on my team.
It's called Cannonade?
It's called Cannonade. And you know what's funny is it's not like a pun on, like, cannon and lemonade or something. It's actually a word in the English language.
I think it comes from French, yeah.
Oh, okay, okay. I mean, you are the language man, so... and you are talking your second language, or is it your third language?
I guess this is my second, kind of. I don't know.
Is it your first? Do you speak mostly English day-to-day?
Day-to-day, yeah. I actually speak a very large amount of English, so it would be my first right now.
Yeah, okay. I had suspicions. You really can't tell, of course, because Yuri is a great speaker. Now, cannonade is a very funny word, and actually a very strong move. It's got the same effect as that G-Max Wildfire, doing 1/6 the damage, but of course being of the water type. And I ended up creating a team, and was having very decent success with it. So I think it's something that, like, I'm not thinking will be huge for Players Cup, but I think it's something that if you build around it, it can be very strong, and I'm going to try it out.
For me, there are a lot of Pokemon. I have not really tested anything in Series 5 yet, because I don't really have an incentive to do so, obviously, given that I don't really have Players Cup to play in July.
Right. Yeah.
But I have watched a fair amount of streams and checked out some things still. There are, like, a lot of Pokemon that seem very interesting, that could be good. So I will just go with, I think the Pokemon that got the strongest, that already existed, that got the strongest buff, which is Indeedee, both forms, because Expanding Force is a stupid move with a stupid, effect. it's just broken. Let's just say it how it is. And I think
Rillaboom is right there, dude. It's okay. It's okay.
I mean, yes, but then you have to have Rillaboom in every team, or Pinkurchin, and, you know, I'm not about that.
Don't forget Weezing.
Weezing is weak to Psychic, though.
Yeah, but they Psychic'd the other slot because you made it not spread anymore.
right. But yeah, I think Expanding Force is just incredibly good. And otherwise, the one Pokemon I am most hyped about personally is Amoongus. He is my friend. He is one of the emblems of VGC for me, and I'm very happy he is back. Consistent Sleep is way more fun to play with than Inconsistent Sleep.
Ah, sing Clefairy, you people. You people.
I am not proud of that. I just did it because it was correct.
I will say right now, and this is my hot take, and I'm fine with putting this out there, I think Amoongus is washed up, man. There's way better grass types, and I don't think I'm going to use it too much.
I think it is a bit washed up, but I still think it's strong, so...
Like, it's still a very strong Pokemon, it's just that I find myself always wanting a different grass type on the team. There are some very strong ones in the format, like Rillaboom and Venusaur.
It's not the Pokemon it was in 2018 or 15 or 14 and 13.
19 and...
And all the
other years.
all the other years. I think it has maybe a bit of the Incineroar syndrome, where a lot of the things it did are not as huge in VGC 2020. Or if not as huge, they're made less important by the mechanics, because Amoongus was a very bulky redirector. It's not useful to be that bulky when the max moves are going to KO you anyway.
It's got four common enough weaknesses, max Airstream being one of the best max moves, combined with also Electric and Fairy preventing Spore. Like, there's just a couple of things that are going to keep Amoongus from doing exactly what it wants to do. But of course, the two most popular terrains, this is so weird to say, is grass and psychic. So those actually are the two that do not prevent sleep. This is, like, so backwards. We used to be, like, Fini Coco all day because, you know, sleep is busted. We got to respect that. And now we just have Rillaboom and Didi. This is so funny.
Yeah, sleep is still busted. It's just that we don't have good terrain setters for the good terrains. And really, you only set up Misty Terrain or Electric Terrain with max moves yourself.
Yeah.
So we're really stealing the show here from Steven. Steven, what are you thinking is going to be cool to try out in Series 5?
Well, I wanted to talk about Amoongus, but, you know, you already pretty much covered all of it. So I'm just going to go with a backup and say, I think a lot of people, like, early on are going to try out Urshifu, mainly because, like, it doesn't have to worry about Protect or the Max Guards if it G-Maxes. So, that's a Pokemon I think can, you know, be used in a lot of different ways. Like, you can put an assault vest on it. Both forms, both the, what is it called? Single strike and rabbit strike, I think? Or multi-strike? I don't remember.
I think so.
But
it's either rapid or multi, but yeah.
Yeah, both of them.
It's rapid and single.
Both of them learn priority moves in Sucker Punch and Aqua Jet, respectively, for the Dark and Water. And, you know, you can still use those to, you know, proc your own weakness policies. And, you know, there are a lot of interesting strategies you can use with them, and they can probably make a fit really strongly on some teams. Like, you know, if you're really concerned with the water one, like, I know Jellicent with a water absorb is something that is immune to both of its stabs. You can play around with them a lot. Like, there's a lot of interesting play you can play with some of the Anger Point Pokemon that came in, because their moves crit all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, right.
So, yeah, there's a, you know, there's that one, and there's obviously a lot more Pokemon that returned that I think probably got a lot stronger with Dynamax. And we can always talk about this on the next show, you know, more about Series 5 as we get closer to the actual date. But, yeah, I'll just go with Urshifu. Like, I think it'll be a strong pick for the beginning of Series 5, mainly because it's, you know, a new tool everyone can use.
The unfamiliarity is going to be one of its strongest aspects. I'll admit that even today, I protected in front of an Urshifu.
Yeah, I've seen people do that a lot.
It's going to, like, I honestly think that it's a solid enough reason to use it in Players Cup, because nobody's going to, like, at least, like, you're going to get cheese out a lot of turns, because people are not ready to handle a Pokemon that just does 100% through Protect.
Oh, also, you know what, like, one interesting thing about for Players Cup is, like, your team is locked for, I think, 2 weeks, right? If you advance all the way to the end in July. So, you know, over in the, especially since this is, like, early Series 5, like, the metagame can shift and there can be answers to some of the earlier teams, you know, pretty early on within a two-week span. So even if those solutions start coming up online or on Showdown, like, you won't be able to incorporate any of those changes into that tournament yet, which is kind of an interesting aspect. You know, most of our tournaments are held over a weekend, you know, 2 to 3 days, whereas this one is going to run over 2 weeks, 3 different weekends.
It's going to be painful.
It's very awkward.
Yeah, it's going to be painful for some people, like the people that, you know, find that missing piece as soon as they start playing in the tournament, or the people who went in with a team that they felt okay about and then discover the team that they're doing so well with now, right after they've already locked in and committed for those 2 weeks.
Yeah, it also probably does not encourage a lot of development over those 2 weeks in the metagame in general, which is awkward, because I'm not going to say it's 2 weeks of stalemate, but it's going to be less improvement in teams compared to your average start of a metagame phase.
Yeah, we haven't actually seen something quite like that, like with how active Showdown and like the Battle Stadium ladders have always been. Like, the meta's always pushing, but it's usually pushing for something, and when the meta just like locks in at a certain point and says like, this is where we're at, like, you could push it further, but it's not relevant until August. Like, that's just like it's something that I think is not really happened to VGC before.
Yeah, and especially as grassroots tournaments will probably be way less common during those 3 weekends, especially the first one. It's just going to be a kind of a weird state of the metagame, I think.
Once we get to that 1 week after the first week, though, that's when we're going to have consistent streaming of it. So
yeah, that is,
that's going to be at least fun. Since we are kind of getting towards the end here, I'm actually just going to plug Yuri for himself. Yuri, you're planning to play in the Rose Tower this weekend, I think.
Yes, I am.
I don't
want
to commit to something for you. But yeah, definitely check that out. I know that I am going to try to tune in so that I can learn what Yuri's team is and beat him.
That's cool.
I don't know what my team is yet.
But do actually go watch Yuri. You know, he's been streaming a lot lately.
Yeah, please check out Yuri. You know, great player, obviously. Just won the Players' Cup here. And in an international in the past, you know, I think you did win with an Amoongus on a team, right?
Yes, my 2018 Internationals win had an Amoongus.
Yeah. So, I thought so. So, you know, obviously, very close to your heart. But, you know, folks, I think we're mostly wrapped up here for this show. And I just want to say thank you to first off, let's say congrats to Yuri again for winning the Kickoff Invitational and making it to Players Cup in August.
I won't say it twice.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
And another reason to say thank you is, thank you for speaking, second slash first of your language.
Yeah.
No problem.
And another reason, of course, is the time zones issue. Alex and I are recording at, a usual recording time for us, and a reasonable time for us here in the United States. But I just want to thank you because it's like middle of the night for you, so appreciate it.
No, this is a reasonable time for him.
I'm just having to be careful not to wake people up, is all.
Aha, I see. Well, with all that, thank you so much for being on here. And we're going to wrap up our show and say that you can find us in a variety of places. You can find us on Podbean, iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. You can leave us a review to help us with visibility, to help others discover the show. If you have some friends who you think would be interested in competitive Pokemon, please tell them about our show here and direct them over here. And you can also email your questions, comments, and feedback to our email, vgchypervoice@gmail.com. And you can find us on Facebook and on Twitter at The Hypervoice. Lastly, you can find all three of us personally on Twitter as well. You can follow me at Super Morioka. Alex, where can people follow you?
You can follow me at LexiconVGC.
And Yuri, where can people follow you?
On Twitter at YuriVGC. That's Yuri with two final E's.
Awesome. Thank you, the listener, so much for listening. We really appreciate it. And stay tuned for more of the Hypervoice.
Alola.
Alola.
Ha ha.